Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis. In fact, we might actually have two good martinis today, depending on how we define these particular stories. All of it brought to you today by Casper Mattresses. Right now, you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase simply by visiting casper.com/lunch and using lunch as your promo code. So more on Casper Mattresses and those great products a little bit later in the podcast. We should point out that Jim is joining us by phone today. He's up in New York doing some work with CNN. Let's talk about our first good martini today. And usually government-run anything is not much of a good martini for us, but politically, it might end up being that way, because right now we see a growing swell of Democrats embracing what they call Medicare for All, but it's really single-payer or government-run health care. Right now, there are six senators publicly on board with this. Bernie Sanders, of course, is one of them, and he's the sponsor of the Senate bill, which will never see the light of day, at least for the next couple of years. Also on board are Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Jeff Merkley, Cory Booker, and now Kirsten Gillibrand. They all have something in common, Jim, and I think it's that they all hope to, or at least consider, run for president in 2020, most of them assuming Bernie won't because he's too old. And so this is getting more and more traction. Nancy Pelosi so far says it's not a litmus test for Democrats, but a lot of people think it's headed in that direction. You wrote about it in The Jolt today, and I think you commented about it on CNN today, that while the concept in a very generic term seems to be fairly popular with the American people, once you dig just a little bit, they hate it. And that could end up being politically beneficial towards Republicans in 2018, considering how badly we've mangled the healthcare issue right now.
Yeah, Greg, I was going to say that I think I nominate this as our good martini just because of the transparent shamelessness of basically announcing we're going to introduce a bill that has all the good parts, all the stuff you like. The government's going to pay for your prescription drugs. The government's going to pay for your basic medical. It's going to pay for all emergency surgery. It's going to pay for, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And how are we going to pay for it? Well, we're going to address that in separate legislation later. Yeah, so we're going to have a press conference where we only talk about the good stuff. And we will talk about how we're going to pay for it sometime down the road, to be determined. And oh, by the way, it's probably going to require trillions in new taxes and things like that. So I'm kind of surprised to see after the experience of Obamacare, Democrats jumping onto this this option as quickly and enthusiastically and as loudly as they are, because it basically relies on everyone forgetting what they promised in 2009 and 2010 under Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act. You know, you're going to keep your plan, keep your doctor, lower premiums. The Democrats just did this. They just told us they were going to fix healthcare system. They told us they were going to make everything cheaper and easier to afford and better care and no waiting times and all that stuff. So I think it's a little fresh for them to come out with a even bigger expansion of government to tell us it's going to work. The other thing is that as much as polling says, oh, people like this, I think people like single payer because they hear that phrase and they think, oh, somebody else is going to pay for it. Kaiser had a really fascinating poll last month which said that if you tell people, you know, do you support single payer? Support is around 55-60%. It's pretty darn high. But then when you say, you know, will you support single payer if it requires tax increases? All of a sudden, 60% oppose it. If you tell them this will have the government have more say in healthcare decisions, all of a sudden, you know, it drops another 19 points. So it's really kind of striking that I think the support for single payer is, you know, a mile wide, an inch deep. People generally like it in theory, but as soon as they learn a little bit more about how it works, all of a sudden they recoil from it.
Yeah, and from what I hear, about half of the House Democratic caucus is in favor of single payer as well. So, Jim, if in fact this gains more steam, which it seems like it's going to on the Democratic side, who's got the tougher sales job in 2018? The people who brought us Obamacare and now say more of that is the answer, or the people who promised to repeal and tripped all over themselves doing that?
I think these skeptics will have this very tangible, very fresh memory to say, remember Obamacare? Remember how great they told you? It's the exact same folks. They tell you if we expand government, it's going to be fine. I think that's going to be really fresh with people in people's memories. And the other thing is that, you know, people are they face the same challenge when they were trying to pass Obamacare. People, the good portion of the public is naturally and instinctively at least wary about change, if not outright afraid of it. And there are a decent number of people who are pleased with their health care, who do like their doctors, who do like their plans, who are reasonably satisfied, particularly if it's employer-provided coverage. So the idea of we're going to scrap all that and put the same institution that ran the Veterans Administration in Phoenix in charge, and they're going to be in charge of the health care for you and your family, people will be very, very wary about it. And I think that, the Democrats may not find this as an easy sell as they think it's going to be.
If you like your plan, you definitely can't keep it if they get their way now. So keep that in mind. All right, Jim, let's move on to our second martini. The more I think about this, the more I think it's a second good martini. Hillary Clinton, of course, is out with her new book entitled What Happened. And I've got a number of excerpts here, including a little bit of an interview she did with USA Today. So there's a number of different things that Hillary Clinton has said, both in the book and in the promotion of the book, that are just head spinning. Somebody else pointed out that at one point in the book, she talks about how she was handed the first draft of her concession speech. And her thought to herself was, I'm not sure the American people ever want to hear from me again. Maybe she should have gone with that instinct, because
we make fun of her political instincts, so maybe they're not as bad as we thought.
All right. So number one, she is refusing to forgive people for not voting for her or not doing more in her campaign. Here's the excerpt. Since November, more than 24 women of all ages, but mostly in their 20s, had approached me in restaurants, theaters, and stores to apologize for not voting or not doing more to help my campaign. I responded with forced smiles and tight nods. On one occasion, an older woman dragged her adult daughter by the arm to come talk to me and ordered her to apologize for not voting, which she did, head bowed in contrition. I wanted to stare right in her eyes and say, "You didn't vote? How could you not vote? You abdicated your responsibility as a citizen at the worst possible time, and now you want me to make you feel better?" Of course, I didn't say any of that. These people were looking for absolution that I just couldn't give. We all have to live with the consequences of our decisions. Well, not her too often, actually. Jim, and then she starts talking about George Orwell in a way that completely misunderstands or intentionally misleads people on what the point of Orwell's writings were. Quote, attempting to define reality is a core feature of authoritarianism. This is what the Soviets did when they erased political dissidents from historical photos. This is what happens in George Orwell's classic novel 1984, when a torturer holds up four fingers and delivers electric shocks until his prisoner sees five fingers as ordered. The goal is to make you question logic and reason and to sow mistrust toward exactly the people we need to rely on, our leaders, the press, experts who seek to guide public policy based on evidence, and ourselves. Then she did an interview with USA Today, and they were talking about alleged Trump campaign collusion with Russia. And she says there certainly was communication and there certainly was an understanding of some sort, because there's no doubt in my mind that Putin wanted me to lose and wanted Trump to win. And there's no doubt in my mind that there are a tangle of financial relationships between Trump and his operation with Russian money. And there's no doubt in my mind that the Trump campaign and other associates have worked really hard to hide their connections with Russians. And here's the greatest Clinton doublespeak I've seen in a long time. So does she believe there actually was collusion by Trump associates? I'm convinced of it, she said, though she stopped short of repeating that explosive word. I happen to believe in the rule of law and believe in evidence, so I'm not going to go off and make all kinds of outrageous claims. But if you look at what we've learned since the election, it's pretty troubling. Jim, this woman is doing herself no favors, but we're enjoying the food fight.
I was about to say, I cannot believe how much I'm enjoying Hillary Clinton's return to the political stage, taking these things in order. Greg, I've seen members of royalty who have fewer entitlement issues than Hillary Clinton walking around thinking non-voters are obligated to apologize to her for not voting. Right? They have wronged her. They have defied her something that was her birthright by having the audacity to not vote. Now, if she wants to, kind of chuckle at them and say, well, you fool, you should have voted for me, fine. I almost admire the honesty, but also that I do not forgive you. And the fact that she feels like these are things, I guess she's got nothing left to lose, so she might as well share all this. And I do believe we are getting, for all the times we've mocked her for lying, I think this is the honest Hillary. I think she's not holding anything back. This is genuinely how she feels. And she feels like the people who, never mind voted for Trump, the people who did not vote have wronged her and, will forever be, should hang their heads in shame of their decisions. The Russian collusion, I guess I'm not surprised by it. if you, the moment she was given the, well, it's not really your fault, this sinister foreign power brainwashed Americans into voting against you. Well, okay. You know, this is familiar to those of us who play the Command and Conquer game, where the old Stalin and the old Soviet Union invented a mind control ray, which explains Trump's election in a very logical and explanational manner. And also, most importantly, it means none of this was Hillary's fault, although she takes sole responsibility for her defeat, she keeps emphasizing. Finally, Greg, if you believe that the lesson of Orwell is in 1984 is trust your leaders, then you probably believe that Brave New World is about the joys of pharmaceuticals.
Oh, very well said. This is probably a little darker than the humorous mood we're in right now. But Hillary Clinton saying, I take full responsibility, but I didn't do anything wrong or I wouldn't do anything differently. We've heard that excuse before.
Greg, who do you think she learned it from? The master.
Yes, he said it a lot. And that was pretty much her exact response to Benghazi as well. So. Amazing. But, hey, whatever helps her sleep at night, right? And fortunately, we're getting a better sleep at night because she's not in the White House. But whoever does need a good night's sleep needs to go with Casper Mattresses, because Casper is a sleep brand that created an outrageously comfortable mattress sold directly to consumers. And that's important. It eliminates commission-driven inflated prices. Its award-winning sleep surface was developed in-house, has a sleek design, and is delivered in a small how-did-they-do-that sized box. The mattress industry has forced consumers for decades into paying notoriously high markups, and Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and simply passing that savings directly to you, the consumer. An in-house team of engineers literally spent thousands of hours, not Joe Biden literally spent thousands of hours developing the Casper. Its supportive memory foam offers a sleep service that's got just the right sink, just the right bounce, and plus, this might be the best part, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature throughout the night. It's already getting rave reviews with over 20,000 reviews and over 4.8 out of 5 stars. It's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress, and the internet doesn't even sleep, but the people who use the internet really do love it. 4.8 out of 5 stars. Plus, if all that isn't good enough, buying a Casper mattress is completely risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and free returns with a 100-night home trial. Free shipping, free returns in the U.S. and Canada. If you don't love it, and after 100 days you should probably be able to figure that out, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Casper understands the importance of truly sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. So get Casper mattresses. Try the 100-night risk-free trial in your home. They'll take all the money back as well as pick up the mattress if you don't like it, but you're going to love it. And right now, you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper, Casper.com/lunch and using lunch as your promo code, Casper.com/lunch. Speaking of voting, Jim, and Hillary Clinton being all upset with the people who either didn't vote or didn't do enough, you know, people who don't deserve absolution, she's probably pretty sad that more places in America didn't do what College Park, Maryland has just done. This is from WTOP, the number one news station in town here. College Park, Maryland will allow non-citizens to vote in local elections. The city council passed the measure on a vote of 4-3. It came after a summer filled with heated debate. The measure applies to green card holders, undocumented immigrants, and those with student visas. The people in favor of it saying these people live here, they're part of our community, and they should have a voice. Other people saying voting is a right of the citizens. There's a way to include diverse populations in this community without giving them something that is an intrinsic right to citizens. Other people wanted a full referendum. Again, it's only in local elections, Jim, but it's already the sixth municipality in Maryland to do this. So my guess is it's being pushed in other places as well. So when non-citizens get the vote, I guess our votes get watered down even more.
Well, let's just say that for those wondering, my understanding is that, yes, it is constitutional as long as it is a local election. They will not be allowed to vote in congressional races and Senate races. Things like that. I do kind of wonder, you know, if you're concerned about illegal voting or people who are not eligible to vote, voting in races like that, having lots of these people showing up on election day, and perhaps people getting the citizen ballot instead of the illegal immigrant ballot, you know, that's the possibility of mix-up does not seem out of the question. One of the things I just like to put the question to the, you know, four members of the council who voted for this. What exactly is the advantage of citizenship? what do we believe separates a person who is a U.S. citizen from someone who crosses our border illegally or gets comes here on a tourist visa or some other visa and just chooses to overstay in violation of the country's laws? What is the benefit of it? And I really think that a certain number of people believe the answer should be nothing, that there should be really no difference between the way the law treats a U.S. citizen and a person who's here illegally. And here's the thing. If you really believe that, you take the full extension, why would you not be an illegal immigrant because you don't actually pay income taxes? because you're not here illegally. In other words, you want to get all the benefits of citizenship, but you don't want to actually have to pay into the process and all the traditional things you have to do. You don't have to register for the draft. You don't have to do any of the things that are traditionally expected of citizens. There's no question, what are the responsibilities of citizens? And I think there are a lot of people who are very comfortable with the answer being none. And what makes you a citizen is simply being here, simply showing. There's no need to fill out all the paperwork and sit through the background check and have a period of time where you're a green card or anything like that. No. If you show up, you're an American. And I think most Americans would say, no, that's not actually how it works. It can be given by birthright. It can be given by legal immigration and naturalization. But there are some people who just simply want to blur that distinction. And I don't know if you understand. If you devalue citizenship, people will not want to be it, right? You have to. If you want people to walk around with pride in their status as a citizen, there needs to be something that separates them from someone who just comes across the border and starts living in a particular place outside the eyes of immigration and border security and the law. And so we'll see if this shakes out. My suspicion is you're right. You will see more localities wanting to push this on. I also could see some places, there's quite a bit of a backlash against that. I think that a lot of people, you're right, would see this as watering down their vote by giving the vote to people who, by most traditional definitions of the law, do not have it. I lived in Turkey for a couple of years. I was not allowed to vote in Turkish elections. If you go study abroad in a foreign country or you choose to live somewhere else for work or something like that, no, you cannot vote there. Why we would make the same offer to people who come into our country, in this case, even illegally, is beyond me, Greg.
It certainly is. And in trying to figure out what our three martinis were today, for the crazy martini, it was this one, as well as a survey showing how badly Americans know the basic functions of government. For example, only about a quarter can name the three branches of government. 37% of Americans couldn't name a single right guaranteed in the First Amendment and so forth. So our civic education is going down. And I think it's leading to decisions like this where people don't even really look at the law or the Constitution. And essentially, they come to the conclusion, well, I want this to happen, so it's going to happen.
Greg, actually, now I think about it, that probably is the strongest objection to my counterargument. Look, if American citizens don't value their own rights and responsibilities, why should anyone else?
Well, that's a cheery one to end on, but you're probably right. So,
happy Wednesday, everyone.
Safe travels back to D.C. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to go to Casper.com/lunch and get $50 towards any mattress purchase and using lunch as your promo code. Again, Casper.com/lunch. And tune in again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.